Well, here we are once again, sharing our evening under lamplight together on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in Cambridge. I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and you are, well, among all the other things you're a listener at this moment, and I'm mighty glad to have you share this time with me. You know you can always reach us here at Lamplight at Cambridge 105 FM or on our homepage, momentsunderlamplight.com, where you can find podcasts of this and all other shows over the past year. This evening under Lamplight, we're going to attend to trains. Yes, I know that sounds a corny theme for a radio show, but I hope we'll find some interesting things for our attention. Come along and see. Well, to warm us up, let's just get some train sounds going. Here I've extracted the ending of the Beach Boys' Caroline No, a sweet song that, for some reason, Brian Wilson felt he had to add to some train sounds at the very end of the song. It's a modern American train, no steam whistle, but that electric warning sound and the clanging of the gates and the rush of the train completely beyond us, just a streak going by, which the dogs bark at, and then it fades in the distance. Here it comes! Well, yes, you'd be barking too. I'd be barking if I were a dog. That was an inhuman monster coming by, overwhelming. We can almost see in the sounds that streamlined streak going past. It's so sad to watch a sweet thing die, Brian Wilson says in the song, because Caroline has cut her long hair and grown up. Maybe this train sound represents an overpowering panic he feels when the girl he depended on turns into a woman and disappears down the tracks away from him. And that's one of the things we'll want to attend to this evening, the train as more than just a means of transportation, but a symbol of moving away and thus of loss and desire, almost always something sad. Yes, that mournful wailing of the whistle. And speaking of mournful whistles, brings to mind the refrain of Woody Guthrie's 900 Miles, a song about a loser, out alone somewhere, walking along the tracks, waiting to hop a train to get back home, only 900 miles away. Lord, I hate to hear that lonesome whistle blow. He's going home and should be happy, but that lonesome whistle just brings out all the sadness weighing him down from all those years away. There are lots of versions of 900 Miles that we could listen to, but I think I prefer the version by James Sparky Rucker, accompanied by John Davies and Rhonda Rucker, which, if we're attentive, can hit us with a sadness right in the gut, as it should do. Notice how he cannot resist the temptation to imitate the whistle with his harmonica.
I'm a-walking down this track, I've got tears in my eyes, trying to read a letter from my home. If this train runs me right, I'll be home tomorrow night, 'cause I'm 900 miles from my home. And I hate to hear that lonesome whistle blow. It's that long, lonesome train going down. I'm gonna pawn you my watch. I'm gonna pawn you my chain. Pawn you my gold diamond ring. If this train runs me right, I'll be home tomorrow night, 'cause I'm 900 miles from my home. And I hate to hear that lonesome whistle blow. It's that long lonesome train going down. If my woman, she said so, I would railroad no more. Pack up my bags and make it home. If this train runs me right, I'll be home tomorrow night. 'Cause 900 miles from my home. And I hate to hear that lonesome whistle blow. It's that long, lonesome train. That I ride on is 100 coaches long. You can hear the whistle blow 100 miles, but if this train runs me right, I'll be home tomorrow night, 'cause 900 miles from my home. I hate to hear the lonesome whistle blow. It's that long, lonesome train going down. I hate to hear the lonesome whistle blow. It's that long, lonesome train going down.
James Sparky Rucker singing the Woody Guthrie song 900 Miles. And here's a joke I just found online about train whistles. Ready? I'll read it like this, I think. This fella who had spent his whole life in the desert comes to visit a friend. He'd never seen a train or the tracks they run on. While standing in the middle of the railroad tracks one day, he hears this whistle. Ooh-wee-doo. But he doesn't know what it is. Predictably, he's hit, but only a glancing blow, and is thrown ass over tea kettle to the side of the tracks with some minor internal injuries, a few broken bones, and some bruises. After weeks in the hospital recovering, he's at his friend's house attending a party one evening. While in the kitchen, he suddenly hears the tea kettle whistling. He grabs a baseball bat from the nearby closet and proceeds to batter and bash the tea kettle into an unrecognizable lump of metal. His friend, hearing the ruckus, rushes into the kitchen, sees what's happening, and asks the desert man, "Why'd you ruin my good tea kettle?" The desert man replies, "Man, you gotta kill these things when they're small."
Yeah. arms of an old loon I know.
And that was Train Time, or actually just under half of Train Time, by The Cream, recorded live at the Winterland Ballroom in San Francisco, featuring Jack Bruce's harmonica solo. See, he too can't resist imitating the train whistle, taking his clue from an old blues piece by Peter Chapman. And if Jack Bruce is the whistle, Ginger Baker is the wheels on the track, and in fact the album's name was Wheels on Fire. Poets too get in on the appeal of the lonesome whistle. Here's a short poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay, where the shrieking whistle merges into the red sparks from the smokestack and chugging steam engine, all calling her to leave and move on somewhere else. It's a sophisticated city poem, but it picks up the train themes from the blues. The railroad track is miles away, and the day is loud with voices speaking. Yet there isn't a train goes by all day, but I hear its whistle shrieking. All night there isn't a train goes by, though the night is still for sleep and dreaming. But I see its cinders red on the sky, and hear its engine streaming. My heart is warm with the friends I make, and better friends I'll not be knowing. Yet there isn't a train I wouldn't take, no matter where it's going. Okay, you get the picture. Now here's another train song about going away. This time, the situation is the train is taking the man's lover away from him, and he calls out to the man on the train to draw his brakes and slow down so the man can get on. This is a song by the Jamaican singer David Scott, known as Scotty. Draw Your Brakes was featured in the legendary Jimmy Cliff film The Harder They Come. Scotty sings in full Jamaican accent and begins the song with a few lines that seem to have puzzled listeners, but I found out what they really mean. He calls out, "Forward and payaka, manhago," that is manhandle, "manhaga," and then go saka. Ken Bilby has explained the line like this, and his explanation contains what our culture coyly calls adult language. In the youth man slang of the time, Bilby tells us, payaka was a verb meaning to take away another man's woman or girlfriend. In this slang, saka meant to fuck, so the song's intro meant, go and take away a next man's girl and grab her and go have sex with her. Okay, not a lot of people know that. But don't go expecting this to be a dirty or what our culture coyly calls explicit song. It's not. It's simply charming in so many ways. Stop that train, I want to get on. My baby, she's leaving me now.
Forward and payaka, manakle and then go saka.
Baby,
I can't even hold on to the back of the train, he cries out at the end. And earlier, play your guitar, brother, 'cause this is indeed a sad, sad song. Yet how come we smile when we hear it? And notice that there's no attempt to imitate the train with a harmonica. And now let's shift to another train poem by W.H. Auden. You may know his Nightmare, a kind of tour de force recreation of the energy of the train, the night train bringing the mail north to Scotland, the words and meter imitating the clacking of the tracks, as in the hypnotic rail repetition of these lines. Letters of thanks, letters from banks, letters of joy from girl and boy, receipted bills and invitations to inspect new stock or to visit relations, and applications for situations and timid lovers' declarations. I also like the line that pictures the engine shoveling white steam over her shoulder. We'll hear the poem read by John Laurie, who does a splendid job of it.
This is the night mail crossing the border, bringing the cheque and the postal order, letters for the rich, letters for the poor, the shop at the corner and the girl next door. Pulling up, beat her, a steady climb, the gradient's against her, but she's on time. Past cotton grass and moorland boulder, shoveling white steam over her shoulder, snorting noisily as she passes silent miles of windswept grasses. Birds turn their heads as she approaches, stare from the bushes at her blank-faced coaches. Sheep dogs cannot turn her course, they slumber on with paws across. In the farm she passes, no one wakes, but a jug in the bedroom gently shakes. Dawn freshens, the climb is done. Down towards Glasgow she descends, towards the steam tugs yelping down the glade of cranes, towards the field of apparatus, the furnaces set on the dark plain like gigantic chessmen. All Scotland waits for her. In the dark glens beside the pale green sea loch, men long for news. Letters of thanks, letters from banks, letters of joy from the girl and boy, receipted bills and invitations to inspect new stock or visit relations, and applications for situations, and timid lovers' declarations, and gossip from all the nations, news circumstantial, news financial, letters with holiday snaps to enlarge in, letters with faces scrawled in the margin. Letters from uncles, cousins, and aunts. Letters to Scotland from the south of France. Letters of condolence to Highlands and Lowlands. Notes from overseas to the Hebrides. Written on paper of every hue. The pink, the violet, the white, and the blue. The chatty, the catty, the boring, adoring. The cold and official, and the hearts outpouring. Clever, stupid, short, and long. The typed and the printed and the spelt all wrong. Thousands are still asleep, dreaming of terrifying monsters, or a friendly tea beside the band at Cranston's or Crawford's, asleep in working Glasgow, asleep in well-set Edinburgh, asleep in granite Aberdeen. They continue their dreams, but shall wake soon and long for letters, and none shall hear the postman's knock without a quickening of the heart. For who can bear to feel himself forgotten?
All right. And while we're travelling by train to Scotland, let's have this famous, or perhaps once famous, poem called The Boy on the Train by Mary Campbell Smith. If I read it right, I hope it will also recreate the sound of the train on the rails. It's in Scots, but you'll no mind. I know that fine. It goes like this. What way does the engine say toot toot? Is it feared to gang in the tunnel? What way is the furnace no pit oot when the rain gangs doon the funnel? What'll I hae for my tea the nicht? A herrin or maybe a haddie? Has grandma got an electric leet? Is the neist stop crocodie? There's a hoodie craw and yon town up raw, and seagulls sacks receiving. I'll no fool out of the windy, ma, it's snecket as sure as I'm living. We're into the tunnel, we're all in the dark, but dinna be freighted, daddy. We'll soon be coming to Beveridge Park, and the next stop's Kirkcaldy. Is yon the moon I see in the sky? It's awful wee and curly. See, there's a coo and a cough out by, and a lassie poo and a hurly. He chucked the tickets and gained them back, said, gimme my onion, daddy. Lift doon the bag frae the luggage rack, for the next stop's Kirkcaldy. There's a gay wheen boats at the harbour moo, and eh, do you see the cruisers? The cinnamon drop I was sookin' the noo has tumbled and stuck to my trousers. I'll soon be ringin' my grandma's bell, she'll cry, come ben, my laddie, for I ken mysel by the queer-like smell that the next stop's Kirkcaldy. That queer-like smell, by the way, that tells the boy that he's coming into Kirkcaldy, comes from the pervasive odour of linoleum, which Kirkcaldy was famous for producing. Now let's stay with children for a minute and hear a poem from Now We Are Six. It's A.A. Milne's poem, The Engineer. I'm not sure if the meter tries to recreate the sound of a train, but it's lively enough. I remember I was so taken by the sound of this poem that I memorized it when I was about 7 years old. You'll have to take a deep breath to start. Let it rain, who cares? I've a train upstairs with a brake which I make from a string sort of thing, which works in jerks because it drops in the spring, which stops with the string, and the wheels all stick so quick that it feels like a thing that you make with a brake, not string. So that's what I make when the day is all wet. It's a good sort of brake, but it hasn't worked yet. Cute, isn't it? Presumably this poem is meant to be spoken by Christopher Robin, but Christopher Robin Milne, the model for Christopher Robin, who was always very proud of his practical abilities to make things work, disclaimed the poem. I may have been a bit undersized, he wrote. I may have been a bit underweight. I may have looked like a girl. I may have been shy. I may have been on the dim side. But if I'd had a train, and I didn't have a train, any break that I'd wanted to make for it, any simple thing like a break, would have worked. And here's another children's poem about trains from Stevenson's Child's Garden of Verses. It too tries to capture the rushing pace of a railroad journey, but this being Stevenson, there is more going on, such as the kind of impressionistic portrayal of the flashing details as we rush by. Life is always full of fleeting impressions. Maybe that's all it is, after all. But the speeding train just brings this all the more noticeably to our eye, even to a child's eye. The train. Faster than fairies, faster than witches, bridges and houses, hedges and ditches, and charging along like troops in a battle, all through the meadows, the horses and cattle, all of the sights of the hill and the plain, fly as thick as driving rain, and ever again in the wink of an eye, painted stations whistle by. Here is a child who clambers and scrambles all by himself and gathering brambles. Here is a tramp who stands and gazes, and here is the green for stringing the daisies. Here is the cart run away in the road, lumping along with man and load. And here is a mill, and there is a river. Each has the glimpse and gone forever. And this sense of momentary glimpses from out the train window, each a glimpse and gone forever, appears in more elaborate form in Stevenson's early essay, Ordered South. Here he offers us a thinly disguised account of the rail journey he took in 1873 to Mentone on the French Riviera to recover from what we might call a nervous breakdown, just 23 years old. The jangle of images stir up his fevered yet dull nerves, and each glimpse becomes a beautiful and wonderful little world he passes. But if the world looks sparkling and wonderful from within the train, the train itself hardly even evokes a thought in the minds of those outside the train. Savor, then, as I read, the interplay of perspectives, the passenger looking out at the landscape, the figures in the landscape simply going about their own business, and at the end, the signalman just doing his job. This can become an emblem of the way we each think our own view of the world is the most special until we realize that no one else is even paying attention to us, unless it's part of their own work. But this does not negate the great excitement of looking out the window as the train rushes by. The stir and speed of the journey and the restlessness that goes to bed with him as he tries to sleep between 2 days of noisy progress fever him and stimulate his dull nerves into something of their old quickness and sensibility. And so he can enjoy that faint autumnal splendour of the landscape as he sees hill and plain, vineyard and forest, clad in one wonderful glory of fairy gold, which the first great winds of winter will transmute, as in the fable, into withered leaves. And so, too, he can enjoy the admirable brevity and simplicity of such little glimpses of country and country ways as flash upon him through the windows of the train. Little glimpses that have a character all their own. Sights seen as a travelling swallow might see them from the wing, or Iris as she went abroad over the land on some Olympian errand. Here and there, indeed, a few children huzza and wave their hands to the express, but for the most part, it is an interruption too brief and isolated to attract much notice. The sheep do not cease from browsing. A girl sits balanced on the projecting tiller of a canal boat so precariously that it seems as if a fly or the splash of a leaping fish would be enough to overthrow the dainty equilibrium. And yet all these hundreds of tons of coal and wood and iron have been precipitated roaring past her very ear, and there is not a start, not a tremor, not a turn of the averted head to indicate that she has been even conscious of its passage. Herein, I think, lies the chief attraction of railway travel. The speed is so easy, and the train disturbs so little the scenes through which it takes us, that our heart becomes full of the placidity and stillness of the country, and while the body is borne forward in the flying chain of carriages, the thoughts alight as the humour moves them at unfrequented stations, and they make haste up the poplar alley that leads toward the town. They are left behind with the signalman as, shading his eyes with his hand, he watches the long train sweep away into the golden distance. Now, let's go back a little to Stevenson's poem. Did you notice that image of the tramp who stands and gazes? There are always tramps as part of train lore, though perhaps more in America than in Britain. And in America, of course, they're not tramps, but hobos. And they seem always to be looking for a ride on the freight trains, while the brakeman on the train does all he can to keep them off, or even throws them off. This is the scene behind Louis Armstrong's song, too good for us to pass over this evening under lamplight. So here's Louis Armstrong's song called Hobo, You Can Ride This Train. And here again we get the sounds of the train worked into the music itself.
My, 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 my. Listen at that rhythm train, boy. Boy, I bet all them hobos are all set under them rides. Even old A number one and all them cats. Yeah, man. All aboard for Pittsburgh, Hattiesburg, all aboard. Oh, boy, you can't ride this train. Thank you. there, boy. You ain't so bad after you all right with me, son. I think I will let you ride.
That music is so jaunty, you'd think they had no care in the world. And even the poor hobo in the end gets a hand up. You ain't so bad. After all, you all right with me, son. I think I will let you ride. With that kind of solidarity, yes, we could all lose all our cares. Another way, of course, to lose your cares is to become absorbed in attending to Evening Under Lamplight, which I hope you're doing right now here on Cambridge 105, Cambridge's community radio, with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson. And we're attending to trains and railways, that sort of thing. We've looked at several treatments of trains in song, but how would the Kinks sing about trains? Of course, they would take an elegiac view, as they do in the Village Green Preservation Society album, an album that looks back at so much that had been lost from the late 1960s England. One very noticeable thing that had been lost was the steam engine. In 1960, there were steam engines everywhere. Then in 1963 came the beaching cuts and the modernizing of the railways, and by 1970, on the fraction of rail lines that remained, you would not have seen any steam engines. In the last of the steam-powered trains, Ray merges his persona with that of a cast-off steam engine. Like the last of the good old puffer trains, I'm the last of the blood and sweat brigade, and I don't know where I'm going or from where I came. I'm the last of the good old renegades. All my friends are all middle class and grey, but I live in a museum, so I'm okay. So what is he? An old steam engine housed in a museum, just on show, but no longer doing what he was made to do? Or the rock star in his mid-twenties, forced to give up the heavy R&B music he used to play in order to cater to audiences and producers demanding pop music? What more can he do but huff and puff with that heavy beat, both recreating the R&B sound and mocking it, and, yes again, instruments recreating train noises, building to a climax of frenetic speed, then collapsing in defeat, perhaps, but still defiant. I'm the last of the good old puffer trains. I'm the last of the soot and scum brigade. And all this peaceful living is driving me insane. In an interview shortly after Village Green Preservation Society came out in 1968, Ray Davis said that the last of the steam-powered trains is really about not having anything in common with people. Everybody wanted to know about steam trains a couple of years ago, but they don't anymore. It's about me being the last of the renegades. All my friends are middle class now. They've all stopped playing in clubs, and they've all made money and have happy faces. Oddly enough, I never did like steam trains much. You can see we're into the part of the show where trains start taking on metaphoric, if not symbolic, meanings. Listen to The Last of the Steam-Powered Trains from the Kinks.
Sweat brigade, and I don't know.
I feel like we're running out of time here, but there are a few more bits to take in. What about trains as vehicles of salvation? Do you know Bob Dylan's Slow Train, one of the songs after his evangelical conversion? It's a rich image, that slow train coming round the bend. Here it's not a hard rain, but a slow train, which we can see from the distance, getting longer and longer as it rounds the bend. And it comes bringing what? Hope? Destruction? Yes, both, depending on how we come to meet it. It's never clear in the song whether the train is the peace train asking us, taking us off to glory, or some juggernaut coming to mow us down that long-expected destruction. Because the song is not entirely religious. Dylan is aware of our abuse of the environment and, more importantly, the economic abuses that are ruining the world and calling for that slow train of ultimate destruction. People starving and thirsting, grain elevators are bursting. Oh, you know it costs more to store the food than it do to give it. They say lose your inhibitions, follow your own ambitions. They talk about a life of brotherly love. Show me someone who knows how to live it. There's a slow, slow train coming up around the bend. And the slow, steady beat conveys this slow but sure approach. But no attempted whistle noises or clackety-clacks, though the steady beat could be taken as that slow chugging in the distance of this something coming. That was 1979. Have we come any further? Has that slow train come any nearer? It certainly seems like it has. As that woman down in Alabama says on the song, "Boy, without a doubt, you have to quit your mess and straighten out. You could die down here, be just another accident statistic. And there's a slow, slow train coming around the bend. And we don't know how long it is or how long it will take to get to us."
Into my companion, are they lost or are they found? Have they counted the cost it takes to bring down all the earthly principles they're gonna have to abandon? And there's a slow, slow train coming. I'll be round the bend. Your message straight now. You could die down here, be just another accident statistic. And there's a slow, slow train coming up around the bend. All that foreign oil controlling American soil. Look around you, it's just bound to make you embarrassed. Sheiks walking around like kings, wearing fancy jewels and those rings, deciding America's future from Amsterdam into Paris. And as it snows, we'll be right back. don't care about his stunning me.
Dylan's Slow Train. And here's another slow train that is surely one of salvation, but no self-righteous salvation. We're introducing Johnny Cash to the show this evening. We've never had him on before, but here he is with his cover of Tom Waits' Down There by the Train. As we stand, I suppose, on some rising ground near Sinner's Grove, down where the willow and dogwood grow, watching everyone being welcomed onto the train, or at least everyone who's been a loser in this life. There's room for the forsaken if you're there on time. And Johnny Cash's sad, weary, wounded voice reminds us that we're all forsaken after all, but not down there where the train goes slow. There's no eye for an eye, there's no tooth for a tooth. That means none of that rigid weighing of offenses, but a prodigal welcome for all the shamefuls and all of the whores, and that just about encompasses us all, doesn't it? Good old Johnny Cash, a tough guy, not afraid to share with us his bloody lacerations, moving us and perhaps encouraging us to be that much more honest and hopeful.
There's a place I know where the train goes slow, where the sinner can be washed in the blood of the Lamb. There's a river by the trestle, down by Sinner's Grove, down where the willow and the dogwood grow. You can hear the whistle, you can hear the bell, from the halls of heaven to the gates of hell. And there's room for the forsaken if you're there on time. You'll be washed of all your sins and all of your crimes if you're down there by the train, 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 down there where the train goes. There's a golden moon that shines up through the mist, and I know that your name can be on that list. There's no eye for an eye, there's no tooth for a tooth. I saw Judas Iscariot carrying John Wilkes Booth. He was down there by the train, down there by the train, down there by the train, down there by the train. He was down there where the train goes slow. lost all your hope, if you've lost all your faith, I know you can be cared for, and I know you can be safe. And all the shamefuls and all of the whores, and even the soldier who pierced the side of the Lord is down there by the train, 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 down there where the train goes slow. Well, I've never asked forgiveness, and I've never said a prayer, never given of myself, never truly cared. I've left the ones who love me, and I'm still raising Cain. I've taken the low road, and if you've done the same, meet me down there by the train, 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 down there where the train goes slow. Meet me down there by the train, 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 down there where the train goes slow.
Johnny Cash singing Down There by the Train, in case you didn't guess. Now, when I was planning the show, Juliet said I had to include the most famous classical train piece, Pacific 231, a Mouvement Symphonique by Arthur Honegger. In 1923, Honegger explained what lay behind this piece. "I have always had a passionate love for locomotives," he said. "To me, they are living things and I love them. What I have endeavored to portray in Pacific 231 is not an imitation of the noises of the locomotive, but the translation into music of the visual impressions and the physical sensation of it. Its point of departure is an objective contemplation, the quiet respiration of an engine in repose, the effort in starting, the progressive increase of speed, passing from the static to the dynamic state of an engine of 300 tons, driven in the night at a speed of 120 miles per hour. As a subject, I have taken an engine of the Pacific type, known as 231, an engine for heavy trains of high speed. And we'll let this symphonic movement of the train take us out at the end of our evening under lamplight together on Cambridge 105, Community Radio in Cambridge, with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, saying thanks for attending and special thanks today to Kate, and see you next time. All aboard!